So hi everybody, welcome to Topless Topics, a channel that seeks to destigmatize female nipples, blah blah blah, you know the spiel. I have a guest with me that was recommended to me by what I know as not NASA. He actually goes by Nosferatu too, but my brain has a hard time remembering that, so I call him NASA, which he said he doesn't mind. We just did a video, what, like 3 days ago that I already put up, and I think it was very informative and cool, and we talked about like gun rights and you know, LGBTQ activism and stuff like that. And so I think it's a really good video. If you want to watch it, it's at toplesstopics.org/NASA, like, you know, the organization. And then yesterday I announced very suddenly that I have 1 day of freedom until my 5-year-old is home for 2 weeks. So if anyone would like to do an interview, let's go ahead and do it. And so NASA threw this lovely person onto the sacrificial altar of representing topless equality. And as you notice, they are brave enough to also be topless like me, which is a nice change. So please go ahead and, for the second time, because it wasn't reporting the first time, go ahead and introduce yourself, maybe a little bit of how you met NASA, and then also what your passions are, your projects, and what you want, you know, how you define yourself. That was a really big question, but
okay, so we'll break it down. So my name is Stormy. I go by Storm Cloud in a lot of spaces. I have been friends with NASA for a long time. We met in some online spaces and just kind of hit it off. I am she, they, non-binary. And some of my passions include homeless rights, disability rights, decriminalizing sex work, things of that nature.
Yeah, I was gonna say you wrote a lovely blurb if you just wanted to read that, but
yeah, what else did I write? I write better than I talk, so
I feel the same. I mean, especially when I'm trying to write like creative writing, if I try to come up with it and just say it, I'm just like tongue-tied. And but if I write it, you know, I'm freaking George R. R. Martin. Maybe not that bad, you know, much good, but see, I just messed up right there.
Yeah, and just feminism in general is a pretty big passion of mine. So getting to come on here and normalize female toplessness or female presenting toplessness is really aligned with my goals. So
yeah, I mean, it works out really well. That's what's so funny about especially topless equality, not necessarily full body nudity, which I also happen to support, but topless equality kind of depends on how you introduce the subject. But by and large, when I talk to people and, you know, I'm like, hey, do you believe in equal rights? And they're like, of course. I'm like, do you believe in equal rights regarding censorship? And they're like, I guess so. Like, so then you think a woman should be able to go topless where a man does. 90% of the time they're like, yeah, actually, yeah. Like, it's just, it's not that people are opposed to it, I think. It's mostly that people just don't even think about it. Because it's just so baked into our culture, which, as I was discussing with NASA in our video, it's an ownership thing. It's a women is property thing. Like, just anyway. So those are a lot of different, but, you know, probably in many ways related ways. I mean, the first one I can think of is how many, you know, the stereotype of the woman down on her luck and selling her body is the only way she can make money, which I greatly disagree with. You know, sex work is work. It's a job like any other, and it should have the protections of jobs like any other. So how did you get into those different, I mean, get into like a hobby? How did you become passionate about those different things, and what kind of experiences have you had with them? Like, have you served on any advisory boards, or have you worked with an online organization, or have you been to marches or anything like that with each of those?
No. So, basically I went from it's a stereotype for a reason. I went from a very not great living situation to being homeless. And whether you are homeless or houseless, you do face a lot of discrimination and a lot of trouble in general. be it from the legal system or from just the sheer survival mode of trying to find shelter and trying to find somewhere safe to sleep and somewhere safe to rest during the day. Yeah. Those were my only two goals.
And having a place to put your stuff without it getting stolen is a big thing too.
Yes.
So here in Portland, you know, it gets really cold in the winter. I mean, for me, I'm from California, so I'm so not compared to Nebraska, but every time it's winter, I can't help thinking, like, God, it would really suck to be homeless right now, where you're, you know, living in a place with no insulation, you're, you know, if it snows, you're snowed in, and, you know, there are shelters around, but I know that it can be, first of all, logistically, can be a difficulty getting there. I have heard that a lot of homeless people don't like to go to them because either they have rules that they really disagree with or sanitary conditions or, you know, or like they won't let you keep your stuff, for instance, or stuff, you know, such like that, or even safety concerns. And so, you know, people, it's to go into a segue, and we don't have to go into this because it's not something I broached with you before, but it's almost like anti-abortionists who are like, oh, just have the baby. And it's like, well, who's going to take care of the baby once it's born?
Right.
And it's just, you know, well, homeless people, why don't they just live in a shelter? There's a lot that goes into that.
There's a lot.
Yeah. So what kind of activism do you do as far as that goes? Do you, like I said, is it an online community or you're just outspoken about it when you get in conversations with people?
I am very outspoken about it in general. I was living homeless on the streets for 2 years, because I wasn't comfortable going to a shelter, for the reasons that you stated.
Yeah. Especially also, the extra danger you face based on how you look. So,
yeah. Yeah. I am disabled. So that was also another, concern. There's a lot to navigate when it comes to homelessness. And so I try to be active in online spaces. With my disability, it's very dynamic and it's hard to, you know, make plans, especially with everything going on. It's hard to make plans to go to marches or anything along those lines. Homelessness.
Well, now you got COVID too, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I'm trying not to take very many risks as far as COVID is concerned.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the marches, you know, I went to a few at the start of Cittadini's regime and they weren't too bad, but I always was also afraid of violence because, you know, especially here in Portland, there's the Proud Boys right next to us, Birth of the Proud Boys. And especially now with Kyle Rittenhouse's trial and everything, I'm just worried about one of these days we're going to have someone just open fire on a march, you know? And so, especially like, I'm not going to take my kids to those. But I mean, I think that, you know, being an online activist is, it gets disparaged a lot, like, oh, Twitter activist. But, you know, there's so many issues that even I wasn't really aware of until I started seeing discourse about it online. And I mean, you have stuff like the racial violence, like that, you know, that judge that is on unpaid leave right now because someone in her, I'm assuming it was someone in her family, thought it would be hilarious to post that video where they were watching video of a home invader and someone in her household screams like, oh, you know, N-word or whatever. And so it's like, this is a Louisiana judge who is fine with talking about, you know, black people like that. Like, obviously she's not impartial. And so the ease of cameras, you know, cell phone cameras and stuff really exposes all this stuff that obviously the people suffering from it knew all along. You know, the discrimination you faced as a disabled person, you know, I'm sure there's probably some videos out there and maybe more videos will come out where someone is actually streaming as they're being abused, you know, as they're being disparaged or whatever. And so I think it makes it a lot more real for people who have a hard time. I mean, we're humans. We have to fight to see the world from someone else's perspective sometimes because it's just not built into the way our brains are made. And so I think having video representation, having firsthand accounts, you know, or for instance, me too, just the overwhelming reports of this is what I went through. The guy from Sex and the City literally just got, he had a Peloton commercial he was in that they took down and everything because right after he, you know, just recently they came out with a sequel. I don't know, I haven't seen it, but two women came out with these very detailed and corroborated stories of him literally raping them. And it's just, you know, people, it wasn't real until they started saying, like, yes, she said this back then, her boss confirmed it, blah, blah, blah. And you'll always have the doubters. But anyway, I wanted to throw out that, you know, again, people are like, oh, online activism, like, I think it has a definite purpose. I don't think it should be the only form of activism out there. And, you know, I have mad props for people like Shannon Watts, who does a lot of gun control advocacy and stuff. And I know we're going to have a future interview, me and NASA, because apparently we have different views, not opposing, but different views on gun control. But just want to say, if you know, anyone watching out there wants to advocate for something that you care about, but you're worried about being dismissed as just being like, you know, or like the dreaded white feminist or whatever, I think it's better to speak up than to just be complicit and let the abuse continue. So you advocate for homeless. So what kind of policies or ideas do you think we should look into as far
housing
as homeless?
Housing first.
Yeah.
I personally have experience with Housing First. Basically, the Housing First model is that whether they are admitted to the program or whatever, the housing comes first. Not recovery, not mental health treatment, not, and that's recovering from either drug or alcohol abuse. None of that matters. What matters first is getting a roof over these people's heads so that we can get out of survival mode. And even then, it takes time.
Yeah. My dad was raised in foster care, and to this day, you know, he's in his 80s. To this day, he still has this, like, almost feeling like he has to hoard food because he doesn't know when he's going to have it again because of his childhood of food insecurity. And, you know, talking about drugs and alcohol and mental illness and stuff like that, that's another dehumanizing thing that you see a lot in people's dismissive attitude towards homeless, where it's just like, you know, oh, crazy homeless people. It's like, well, wouldn't you have a hard time coping if, you know, you didn't have a place to sleep, you didn't know if you were going to have a meal for that day, you know, you haven't been able to have a shower for a long time. And then on top of that, some of us do have chemical, you know, chemical inadequacies or whatever. Like, I take mood stabilizers, because without them, I'm just so mad all the time. So mad and just like crying. And well, I'm not extreme, but I basically do take things too hard. And so if I were to not have that chemical imbalance assistance, and as you said, survival mode, it's a fatal combination. So, and then again, with, you know, alcohol and stuff like that, like that's an attempt to self-medicate, because this country doesn't value healthcare. It certainly doesn't value mental health care. And, you know, if you can't afford a room in a hotel, let alone a psychiatrist and, you know, medication or whatever, like, what else are you going to do? So,
yeah, anyway. I mean, $20 may or may not get the psych med that this person is supposed to be on, or the multiple psych meds that a person is supposed to be on.
Yeah.
But I bet it can get you something to deal with the response that you're dealing with if you are out on the streets. And it is something that I hear a lot, is don't give money to this person because they'll spend it on drugs or alcohol. It does not matter. When most people in that situation find some method of self-medicating.
I mean, again, you know, it's funny how we really rely on our base instincts for so much. We tightly like to tell ourselves that we're these evolved creatures and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the biggest thing is the us versus them tribalism, where it's like, you know, oh, homeless people, they're their own problem. And the thing that, you know, especially with the pandemic, should really drive home is it's not a hard switch, like you are homeless or you'll never be homeless. Like, anyone can go homeless at any point. And, you know, same thing with medical care. Like, my husband suddenly got laid off in July, and he found another job a month later, or not even a month, like 2 weeks later, but only like 2 days ago did they finally hire him as a full-time employee. So we had to rely on Medicaid for that whole time. And I had a scare with my three-year-old, and I was like calling around trying to find an urgent care, and like none of them took Medicaid. So it was just, again, you know, it's just crazy that we like to tell, I don't know, sorry, I'm like rambling. I was just gonna say, I get so mad when people have this myth of American exceptionalism when we really, it's a facade. We do not take care of our citizens at all.
It is.
So as far as housing first, what kind of housing model do you support? Like, do you, you know, sort of the halfway house where it's almost like a, not sorority, but you know, people share the house until they can find something more stable. Do you like the like cubicle, village cubicle ones, or what kind of model would you support?
I think that they all serve a different purpose. I think that there should be halfway housing for those who want to get into treatment, who want to get immediately into treatment. And a halfway house is a more immersive environment for that. A housing in apartments is always good, where the beneficiary gets there. That's what I am on. I'm on a voucher that allows me to have my own apartment. And then all of the Section 8 options. So
yeah,
being able to get into either a house or an apartment, treatment facilities, they're all there for a reason. And most of them need more funding. But it's different strokes for different folks.
Yeah. One thing that I read about now and then and I think is fascinating are these little cubicles that they'll put in like a, not even cubicle, but like almost like a self-contained, almost like a trailer, but not on wheels, mm-hmm. you know, put on the ground or whatever. And there's some that I read about that sound really nice where like it has a bed, it has its own little mini kitchen and bathroom. And then there's like a communal area where people could go out and socialize and eat and everything. And some of them are actually being 3D printed. That was another one that I was reading about that was really fascinating to me. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, the dream is to own their own house and live, you know, just with the chosen people or whatever. And if we can, you know, assist people to get to that stage, it is, it's a good end goal. I actually personally I wouldn't want to be forced into it, but I've always wondered what it would be like to live in more of a community kind of thing like that, because that part sounds really nice. I mean, having like a communal area where you can have dinner with your neighbors and stuff without it being weird. So that part I don't think necessarily is a bad, but again, you know, everyone has different privacy concerns, and I can understand, especially if you came from a place of violence, why you might not want to be living so close to people. So, neighbor's dog. What kind of things did you find helpful in your situation and kind of, you know, get out of homelessness with the understanding that can happen at any time to anyone?
So first, most people are one paycheck away from homelessness. And then there is...
Or medical emergency.
Yes. Or one medical emergency or, you know, and it doesn't even have to be health related. It could be an accident. An accident can happen at any time. And now suddenly you're under a whole bunch of debt and everything goes topsy-turvy. And then there is an unseen population of people who are homeless, who are couch surfing or living in their cars or bouncing from family member to family member. I think obviously besides more funding, we need more awareness of the resources that are available. That one was really hard to access.
Yeah. People get so used to just being able to Google something, but if you don't have access to a smart device, what are you going to do? Look it up in a phone book? Like, so.
And surprisingly, most people do have access to smart devices. Most homeless people do have, you have to have a phone. If you are trying to go to work, you have to have a way for them to call you. Something that
but
was
then
really
you have
helpful.
To be, I was just saying, but then you have to be careful about scams.
Yeah.
So.
Something that was really helpful was that in one of the cities that we stayed in, it had, the cops were, they weren't pro-homeless, but they weren't anti-homeless in the way that other cities were. Mm-hmm. they carried pamphlets that had a printout of the phone numbers, of the addresses, of the various services that were available that are set up in their city for various homeless people. Summer showers, you know, once a week, laundry once a week or twice a week, food boxes, pet food, access to being able to get important documents like social security cards or birth certificates if you never had or have lost them since being homeless, things that are important for functioning in a society, at least
that's
in
really cool.
America.
I wish to see. I wish we could see that expanded across, you know, the whole country. Well, one of my longtime followers, he actually goes by the nickname Off Grid Gamer, and it's interesting because he has a smartphone and he's a computer and he's homeless, and he'll like play games on his computer using his phone internet, which is just kind of trend setting. And he was this he was in this really bad situation where he was working for a fast food joint. And the boss was super, you know, well, the friend is white, but he was super, you know, homeless, discriminatory. Uh-huh. And also, you know, my friend happened to be gay and stuff like that. But because he needed the paycheck, he just put up with it and for so long. And then finally, with the COVID relief, he was actually finally able to quit that job and find one that wasn't as abusive. And so, you know, that's why stuff like COVID relief is so important. But he, you know, talking to him really kind of changed some perceptions that I had of homeless, you know, people where it's like, there's homeless gamers that, you know, they don't have as much access as I do, but that doesn't mean that they don't love video games and, you know, we shouldn't begrudge them. Things, you know, enjoyment. And I mean, that's another hot topic that you see with a lot of anti-homeless advocates where it's like, you know, we gave them money and they spent it on a smartphone. Why, you know, they should have spent it on food or whatever. And like you're saying, you know, it's vital to have a phone if you're going to try to integrate with society at all. I mean, you know, if you're trying to find a job, how are you going to get calls back from the job? They're not going to drive up and visit you. And, you know, and beyond even that, you know, we all like our luxuries. I'm not saying you should buy a private jet for a homeless person, but, you know, like, give them nice stuff sometimes. And remember, and this sounds, you know, but we're all human. We all, you know, want to be loved. We all want to not feel panicked about having a place to sleep. And I don't know, it just, it breaks my heart to see people so easily fall into this, well, I'm not homeless, they should just take care of themselves mindset. They might not even recognize that they're doing it, but by saying, you know, oh, it's not that important, let's fund this other thing, like, you're just condemning these people, so.
One of the things that the thought process for me personally when I was homeless was, okay, I have these couple of luxuries. I can either hold on to them until I have a house, for the ones that I couldn't use, like I had, I did have an Xbox. Couldn't use it, but I held on to it.
You greedy.
Yeah. I had a laptop. My thought process was I can sell these things and maybe get shelter for a day, a week, a month, maybe a month. And then what? What is my next step after that? Now I'm out of whatever item that I have. I won't have the money to buy it in the future. And I still don't have a house or somewhere to live.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, cost-benefit analysis. Did you have any final thoughts about homelessness, or do you want to move on? Okay.
No, we can use this to segue.
Well, because what I was going to say is, you know, the other thing that you said you're passionate, or one of the other things you said that you're passionate about is, and again, like, as I said at the beginning, they're all kind of intertwined, as most things are. But your efforts to decriminalize sex work. So, yes. Couple questions about that. How do you define sex work? Do you think there are things that should be, you know, kept illegal or whatever? What resources do you recommend? And what would your ideal future be with the decriminalization of sex work and everything like that? Go. Just kidding. 10 seconds on the clock.
So what defines sex work? Sex work is a big umbrella. It goes from things that are currently legal and perfectly, like, I wouldn't say normalized. They're not normalized yet. But things
what,
like...
What was it that one Republican that literally just said something about, like, porn is ruin. Porn and video games are destroying the men of America.
I know.
It's like, okay.
So yes, working in porn, working in live porn, so live webcamming, all the way from there to more gray illegal areas, such as being a sugar baby, all the way through what is currently known as prostitution. That's
what do you mean? What is currently known as?
So, for me personally, prostitution is kind of a slur because it's a legal terminology. It's a legal definition. And that's the difference for me between legalizing and decriminalization. We don't need those laws on the books that criminalize someone for doing whatever they feel they need to do in order to survive. There's people who choose sex work and there's survival sex work. I got into it with survival sex work. And it shouldn't be a legal question. Things that should still be a legal question are trafficking should obviously still be illegal. That's an entirely separate, it's a related topic because it's kept sex work is kept in the forefronts of people's minds through, oh, well, the sex trafficking ring was broken up or blah, blah, blah.
It's kind of a scapegoat, I think, where it's just like any attitude, any anti-sex work attitude. It's like, well, because I am stopped being trafficked. And it's like, no, you're really not. As far as the legalizing versus decriminalizing conversation, there is a sex worker advocate and exotic dancer, I don't know the official term, whatever, who has her own podcast and is and talks about it a lot on social media and stuff like that, named Elle Stanger. And I've talked about her a few times before. I met her, I wouldn't say I know her, but I've talked to her originally through the Slut Walk protest. The first one I went to, I think, is 2017, and then I went the year after. And then the year after that, they actually made it a show on a stage because they were getting harassed so much doing it as a protest. But yeah, she's amazing. She does really good work on that. And she kind of said basically the same thing that you did as far as, you know, legalizing sex work still makes it sort of it's almost like you're talking about it like it's a drug, like you have to like give specific amounts and, you know, if they make this much money they must file this tax paperwork or whatever. And I didn't even think about it. I think I might have actually like commented and then she replied and that's how I learned about it. I don't remember exactly, but that is another thing that, you know, us not talking about sex work and just like throwing it in this big old category is something that's not going to occur to a lot of people. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah, my biggest concern with legalizing it versus decriminalizing sex work is that there will always be someone who gets into the industry because they cannot afford whatever. It is a low barrier to entry job. You don't have to interview. You don't have to apply. None of those things are necessary in order to get into the industry. And by legalizing it, we would be setting up a framework such as Las Vegas, where there's all of these tests that maybe somebody can't afford, or a license, or they have to be sponsored by a brothel, or criminal background checks that they may not be able to pass. It's adding barriers to entry to a career that is already, it can be emotionally hard to enter, especially if you're entering it for survival. Let's not add criminalization through legalization on top of that.
That's a really, really good point, because that's the thing about legislation is, you know, duplicitous people, bad faith actors, they'll pretend that it's a legal thing, but they'll use it as an excuse to put some truly terrible policies in place and enforce their view worldview. Case in point, so-called voter fraud. They are passing insane laws because it's voter fraud, and then somehow those laws only seem to really affect poor people of color. Isn't that interesting? So yeah, for sure, you know, if they focus on legalizing sex work instead of decriminalizing, then it's just opening the doors on that kind of underhanded methods of control. So however much you want to talk about it, I don't want to make it in specific questions because I don't want to like make you uncomfortable. Okay. But basically, as much as you feel like talking about what is your personal experience with sex work, and you know, do you look at it the same way now that you did before, or anything like that you feel like sharing? Loaded question, I know.
It's a hard question.
Take your time. Take your time. I can just edit out the dead air, so it's fine. Here, I'll eat some chips while you think about your answer. I'm really hungry. I forgot to eat breakfast. And then I was walking up here with my stuff. It's okay. I'm just, like, looking at your background. Like, it's a psychedelic image right now, so. did this just turn into asthma?
So, when I got into sex work, it was in the good old Backpage days. Which was, compared
that was
to
like
now,
that was like a Craigslist for sex workers kind of site,
It was a Craigslist for everything that Craigslist banned site. Mm. And, it got like taken down by the feds and,
yeah, I vaguely
a whole
heard
bunch
of
issues. But yeah, it was again, low barrier to entry. Just throw up a couple of pictures and a phone number and someone will get to you. Yeah. That was stressful for me.
I bet.
especially because Backpage was kind of, there's tiers of websites, for like advertising, and Backpage was the lowest of the low that you could do without street walking. I did have the privilege of being, I've never street walked, but that's because, again, my disability, I have, I do use a wheelchair, at least now I use a wheelchair. And that also was a barrier. My disability was also a barrier to more legal versions such as stripping. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get into stripping because it's a low barrier to entry.
And it's legal.
Yeah. I physically could not do that at the time. I physically cannot do that now. I also was homeless at the time, so I didn't have someplace for people to come meet me. I didn't have the money for a hotel or motel. Car dates are very sketchy and very scary thing to happen. Because you're getting,
I was gonna say, everything you're describing is just terrifying to me, because I'm just thinking all the things that could have gone wrong. And I mean, this is why, you know, there's such a high murder rate among sex workers, is because there's no protection. You're at the mercy of your clients, who could just,
if something goes wrong, my choices are to suck it up and deal with it, pick up the aftermath, or to potentially go to law enforcement, who may arrest me for my part in the crime. Mm-hmm. That's just not something that I was willing to do.
That's just so insane. That's such a stupid system.
And I'm very lucky and I'm very privileged that I, one, was able to do indoor work, from the beginning. And that nothing happened. I went from
Backpage. Well, you lived to tell the tale. To
I did,
you know, warn about to warn about those who don't survive, who don't, you know. ever get the opportunity to raise awareness. So, I mean, I'm glad that you're, you know, I'm glad that nothing happened to you, but I'm also glad that you're, you know, brave enough to be here advocating for this and really getting people to think about the lack of safety.
So from there, I moved to the gray area that is sugar babying.
Can you define that for us, please?
So being a sugar baby is when a usually young, usually attractive, usually female presenting person engages in dating someone who has more financial means than they do for the exchange of the implicit exchange. I don't know if I'm using implicit, but of money, of an allowance, and the, it's assumed that you're going to have sex. You're basically dating these people. And
it's basically the trophy wife thing, but without the security of marriage.
Yes. Some make it to that point, but not most people don't.
They're disposable.
Yeah, and a lot of sugar parents will move on once you're not attractive enough or able enough or whatever the case may be.
The allure fades.
Yeah.
Yeah. The stigma against that enrages me because, she's doing it for money. He's doing it because he thinks she's hot.
Yeah.
Freaking hypocritical. No, I mean, probably there's very, very, very few, if any, sugar parents going out and finding someone that, you know, they just are like, oh, this person's down on their luck, I'm gonna give them money for sex, which, you know, would be fine if, as long as it's consensual. But I mean, it's just so, it's not like it's not like the sugar parent is doing it purely altruistically, you know.
Right.
So
Oh, she's a gold digger. Okay, yeah. And?
Yeah.
She wants
security. As long as she's not lying about it, I mean, right. You know. Sorry, please continue. So you started doing the gray...
I did. It's more of a legal
50 Shades
gray
of Grey,
area.
You might say.
No, I do not mix those two things. There's a lot of vulnerability required with BDSM. Yeah.
I couldn't not make the pun. I'm sorry.
So as my physical ability started to get worse, I became uncomfortable. There's a lot of internalized ableism that I'm currently always fighting with. And it felt like I, one, aged out of the game. I'm 27. It's usually a young women's game.
I just turned 36, so I guess I might as well die now. No.
obviously, there are exceptions to the rule, but this is, generally speaking, mm-hmm. how it happens. And I became uncomfortable presenting as disabled with clients and with people in this... under this context. So I moved on from being a sugar baby to camming. And camming is its own dragon. But it allowed me to be able to pretend I'm presenting as able-bodied. I don't have to have my chair on camera. If I'm just in my own space, camera to camera, I am safe, and there isn't the level of vulnerability of these people who I'm interacting with, these strangers that I'm interacting with, knowing that I am physically disabled.
You just made me think of another reason that, you know, which we'll get into, but the social media stigma and blocking of even having the word OnlyFans in your bio or whatever is actually pushing sex workers into danger. You're actually pushing them back to where they're physically, you know, in danger. and this made up thing of like, oh, we're stopping child trafficking. You're not.
No.
All you're doing is pushing, pushing people back into danger. So.
Yep. And I've gotten like OnlyFans set up and all that fun stuff, but I've predominantly been putting my energy into learning camming because it's a different dynamic entertaining for a camera and interacting with a camera than interacting with an individual.
Because I mean, you're not touching them, so you have to come up with some other kind of thing. And at least camming, I mean, as far as I know, is legal. I mean, I'm sure there's you know, things you're not allowed to do. I would think, like, violence and stuff like that. There'd be rules against.
There's a lot of rules, but generally speaking, yes, it is at least legal as far as the government is concerned. I'm not going to get arrested because I'm performing on camera.
Yeah. Of course, you know, there's still threat because people can still stalk you and stuff like that.
Yep.
So again, thank you for your bravery in doing this. That is amazing. That is tremendous. Dang it, I had a really profound point. I was going to say it and I forgot. Anyway, so talking about, you know, aging out, one of the interviews I did that I'm still, I don't know if proud is the right word, but I think is a really good video is I interviewed this this porn star and exotic dancer, Eden Blair, who really talked about a lot of myths and, you know, misconceptions about sex work and everything like that. And she was talking about how when she was younger, she, she looked like a teen even when she was like 22 or whatever. And then she got to this point in her, I think, late 20s where she didn't look like a teen anymore, but she wasn't old enough to, you know, do like MILF stuff. And she was actually like, it seemed like she was kind of happy because when we did the interview, she was getting into MILF age range. So right. It's like there's this gap where it's like people, you know, people don't look for your porn because they want to, you know, they have pedophilic kind of inclinations versus, you know, MILFy kind of stuff. And I mean, that's interesting to me. I don't know why there wouldn't be, you know, plenty of people looking for porn of any category, but... so you said that you wanted to get away from disability, you know, mentioning the disability in your stuff. Is it safety? Is it because you felt like you were being fetishized and so it kind of dehumanized you? Or what, if you don't mind going into why you felt that change?
Yeah. So for me, it was, I didn't experience fetishization.
It's a hard word.
Yeah.
I can't even say it now.
Fetishization.
There we go. say that five times fast.
Thankfully, I have not had to deal with that intersection. However, I have seen online spaces and in disability-focused spaces, the idea of a devotee. And from the person who is disabled, it's a fetish for someone who usually, not always, devoteeism is just disability in general, but it can be specifically someone in a wheelchair or specifically an amputee. And usually people are just subjected without their consent to this fetishization of their bodies.
Like a woman in a bikini, you know, picture of a woman in a bikini in a wheelchair. People are passing it around like, oh, look at this.
Right.
Yeah.
Or videos being taken in public spaces that are, again, against their consent. And that was something that I wanted to, when I was ready to get this chair, it was something that I was interested in catering to because, you know, I'd already been in sex work. I'd already been in fetish spaces. This was not.
Sorry, my neighbor's dog just never shuts up. I'm listening.
it wouldn't have been something new to me, but as I read and as I gathered information from other disabled people, I became more uncomfortable with the idea because I didn't want to normalize my disabled body being fetishized. Mm-hmm. Even with my consent, I did not want to normalize it to a point to where other people would be impacted.
That's really, you know, empathetic of you. So, and then, I mean, you know, here you are affecting your bottom line, but you're doing it with, you know, being mindful of how, like you said, your normalization of fetishizing disabled people could have very harmful impact on people who don't want that to happen. And if I can, I mean, not to, you know, I'm not trying to say that I'm like on the same footing as a disabled person as far as this goes, but that's why I'm trying to normalize female nipples, is because we're fetishized no matter what we do. Yeah. And I mean, like, literally this video, I can't put this video up basically anywhere except for porn sites, because we're told we're sexual, you know, we have our shits off, therefore we're literally having sex right now. So I can understand, you know, that concern, but, you know, and that one is sort of the opposite, where it's like taboo to fetishize disabled people unless you're in that, you know, fetish area. So, you know, you're preventing it from turning into non-consensual fetishization, where I'm saying this is already fetishized, so let's maybe defetishize just female nipples purely just existing. At least give us the same rights as men. That's all I ask. I like those same rights as, you know, male nipples. So that, I mean, yeah, that's really interesting, that kind of evolution towards that. And, you know, I'm really happy that you've found a place, you know, camming, where you can be mindful of that. You know, you're still finding work, but you're not having to have that moral quandary that you're grappling with every time. So that's really neat. This is I don't know if you really want to go into this, but I wanted to know if you have personally known or heard of any specific kind of dangers, or, you know, sad tales, or, you know, even just stories that you heard on the news that affected you, of sex workers coming to violence. Because I think that's something that a lot of people who just aren't seeking out, you know, stuff about sex work aren't really conscious of, like, except as like a dim idea, like, oh yeah, she might get murdered. So I don't know if there is any situations or stories that, you know, really resonated with you in a, I guess, negative way.
Well, that was part of the reason why I am unwilling to be vulnerable in that way, with in-person clients. Having a physical disability, I'm already like, and then I'm in a dangerous career on top of that. Mm-hmm. That was a risk that I was trying to mitigate, that I have been trying to mitigate by keeping, even on camera, my disability separate from my performing persona. It allows me, it may just be all in my head, but it allows me a level of safety and anonymity, because mm-hmm. I'm presenting as able-bodied. There have been stories of women who have been murdered by, I can't remember statistics right now, but by potential clients. And there's any time that I am enmeshed in sex worker space, it is a near weekly occurrence of someone being hurt, being raped, being murdered. Trans women, especially trans women of color, especially, are at risk for these things because, hey, hate crimes happen.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of hate crimes coming from every angle. Oh man, I know. And then, like, it's just terrifying thinking about it. So
the way that society rejects their label as victims.
Yeah. Oh, they deserved it. They chose to be a sex worker.
Yes.
Yeah. And, well, again, people becomes, dehumanize, so.
Yes. And it becomes this dichotomy of either, okay, someone's in sex work who is a victim who is trafficked. Okay, well, we can forgive their crimes then. Or we can forgive
their... She chose sex work, therefore she deserved to...
Yeah. And there's this really weird line of being cognizant and being vocal about the risks, and also being aware that, hey, most people are normal. Most people mm-hmm. that I see are just normal people going yeah. about their lives. Most people I interact with are just normal people. I am just a normal yeah. people.
yeah.
I just happen to have a dangerous job.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, you know, when you do see these murder stories, like, it's so obvious the racial bias when you have a black woman get murdered versus a white woman. And yes. it's like, the white woman died, and it's like, oh, she was always smiling, and she was such a sweetheart, and blah, blah, blah. And if it's, like, a black woman, it's like, they just, there's plenty of, you know, people that love her, I'm sure, but they don't get primetime news. And also, you know, if it ever came out that a white, even a white woman, if they're a sex worker and they get murdered, it's just like, by the way, someone got murdered. Anyway, on to the weather. It's yep. just, like, it's not romanticized, it's not, like, tragic, like, it's just, yeah, it's just this, it all seems to come back down to dehumanization, there we go, dehumanization of people with disability, dehumanization of people who do sex work, you know, just dehumanization of people who are trans or gay or anything like that, yes. like, it's just, I don't understand why we do that, I don't understand why that's baked into humanity, and, I mean, I wish more people fought against it, but of course we're dismissed as, you know, snowflake SJWs for giving a shit about anyone besides ourselves. For shame, you know, you care about people beside yourself. What a lib, you know, lib T word.
How dare you?
So, I guess that's kind of a good overview of, you know, those three things. Did you have any other passions or anything that you wanted to talk about? Or do you want to, I mean, I don't know. I'm used to my interviews going on like 3 hours, but I'm trying to cut down on that a little bit. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about, or should I maybe, you know, have you back on the show another time to talk about another issue if you want?
I think the main thing that I want to address, just because I have the time, is that,
oh, I didn't even ask you about the topless thing. Sorry, I totally forgot. Sorry, go ahead.
I just want to remind people that COVID isn't over. It's really not. And people, I'm an extrovert, or at least an ambivert, and I have made a couple of choices I'm not proud of about going out since the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah. Well, there was a little while there where we thought we were doing okay, and yeah, and then everything got bad again.
And yeah. people are like, oh, well, it's not really a risk if you're vaccinated. There are people who, even if they are vaccinated, yeah. cannot make the antibodies necessary to make COVID okay. And even mm-hmm. if you get the vaccine, even if you can still end up with post-viral illness, and that mm-hmm. alone has caused an effect of disabling a portion of the population who has mm-hmm. gotten COVID, and they're calling yeah. it long haulers and long COVID.
Yeah. I actually, so my followers know this, but I had COVID way back in February 2020, mm-hmm. and for the whole year after that, I would just have these random things happen off and on for like months at a time. For a couple months there, I would just, my heart would just start racing and hammering. For a long time, the way I described it, because I went to urgent care like 3 times and they just kept dismissing me and sending me home, was it felt like I was breathing in, but I wasn't processing the oxygen. It was mm-hmm. just coming in and going out. And, you know, over the course of the year, doctors finally started to take this long COVID thing seriously, bit by bit. Some doctors, I'm sure there's plenty out there that are still saying it's all, you know, a hoax to make Trump look bad. And yeah, like, long COVID is serious. And like, literally just 2 days ago, I was waiting at the bus stop to you know, greet my 5-year-old coming off the kindergarten, and my neighbor was there waiting for his kid. Or maybe we're dropping the kids off. Anyway, and I was talking about, you know, getting vaccinated and There's a bug in my face. I was talking about, you know, Omicron and stuff like that, and he was like, well, only 100 kids have died. I was like, actually, it's closer to 500. And that's to say nothing of all the kids, you know, the, what, 1 in 3 kids that have reports of long COVID. And, you know, even to this day, I have a headache that never really goes away. And it's been 2 years since I had COVID. And yeah, just, oh my God. I mean, it's kind of funny talking about COVID in this video because honestly, we could have been intersecting it with everything else. You know, obviously homelessness, you know, living in a hotel or whatever. I will say one thing that a lot of people were saying at the beginning of COVID was like, we have all these hotels that are just sitting empty. Why don't we let homeless people stay there?
So, thankfully, at least here, they did start doing that. They did start making arrangements and allowances for people to be able to live in all of these empty hotels and motels. Yeah. And I think long term, it would be a good solution rather than just, like you said, give the building.
Give them a place to have security so then they can work on, you know, finding a job or whatever. Like, if they were to stay at a hotel for a month, that might be long, you know, or a couple months, that might be long enough for them to find a job that they could afford an apartment. Going back into that, it's kind of funny. And yeah, I mean, with the vaccination too, like, I waste way too much time on Twitter dealing with anti-vaxxers when I know it's a lost cause. But I see just the dumbest things where it's like, well, if the vaccine isn't, you know, completely preventing infection, what's even the point? And it's like, it's not just about preventing infection. It's to not, so you don't go to the hospital and die when you have it.
Yeah.
No vaccine is 100%. And also, you know, even if you don't necessarily get sick, it's so you don't give it to people that are going to be a lot, you know, at a lot more risk. Like, my mom actually succumbed to cancer this past February, but if she had not, I'd be just in terror for her. Because, I mean, she was very weak from cancer already. And, you know, COVID would have just... And, I mean, my dad, you know, he's pretty frail, too. He doesn't have cancer or anything, but I was really happy to get his booster. And I was really happy when I was watching the thing yesterday and they were showing a graph of hospitalizations... from not just Omicron, but, you know, whatever. And it was like, unvaccinated, vaccinated, booster. And I was just like, yes. I mean, you know, the science is always changing, but it gave me a little bit of hope. And, you know, my five-year-old finally was able to get his first two shots, but he hasn't gotten a booster. And my three-year-old is helpless. And so it's just like, people are just so freaking selfish and short-sighted. Everything breaks down to that. So yeah, you know, that's a good point. Maybe someday in the future, I don't think we're ever going to get rid of it, but maybe we'll have it down to a manageable level where, you know, we have a yearly vaccine and people that don't want to die of COVID get the vaccine and it, you know, keeps it manageable. So at least again, you know, hopefully you don't die from it. And you know, I can see us watching this video like 5 years from now and being like, oh, remember COVID? Of course, we'll, you know, all be drowning and we're on fire at that point. But it got to 117 degrees in June here in Portland. That was terrifying. So, I think that was really
the top.
Oh, sorry. See, I'm so used to talking about it that I just like, it feels exhausting. I mean, I'm fine, you know, doing it with another person, but when I'm doing videos by myself, like, I get people asking the same questions over and over, and it's like, I already did, like, 300 videos. Like, 20 of them are talking about this. Go watch those. But, yeah, so, I mean, here you are, you know, willing to be topless, and algorithms would peg you as female. So, same as me, you would be getting, you know, if I were to try to post this, even if I only showed you in this video, like I only showed NASA in our video and, you know, he's a man and he kept his shirt on, this would be treated as pornographic and would get banned. So where do you draw the line between, you know, nudity and sex? And, you know, do you consider female nipples nude? Like, full body nude, the same as, you know, if a man were shirtless. Of course, you know, I love when I get the, if women could go without a shirt, I should be allowed to walk with an erect penis. What? But anyway, feel free to.
I've seen people compare someone, not even fully topless, but breastfeeding openly to someone receiving fellatio.
Yep.
in a public space. And it is, that is ridiculous. There is, that is not a comparison whatsoever. Can female nipples be sexual? Yes. Are they inherently sexual? No. Can male nipples be sexual? Yes. Are they inherently sexual? No. Nudity in general, can it be sexual? Absolutely, in the correct context. And if I'm, you know, baking or doing chores or whatever, topless or nude, how is that sexual? I'm not performing sex acts. I'm not pretending to. I'm just doing my everyday tasks. I just happen to... It's hot here, so it's too hot to be worried about clothes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we were talking about fetishization earlier. And unfortunately, you know, again, we women, not necessarily we, but I mean, people that look female, we are sexualized no matter what we're doing. And so women cooking, women doing chores, that's also treated as if it's a sexual fantasy. And the problem with that guiding our legislator and our social media rules is people can sexualize whatever they want. They could say, you know, there are plenty of cultures that to this day say, like, a neck is super sexual, or, you know, your shin is, or, you know, calf of your leg or whatever. So it, you know, as you were saying with, like, legalization versus decriminalizing sex work, making it this whole, not even just legal, but, you know, societal rules about what female-presenting people are allowed to do or not do, and when it's, you know, said that it's sexual, is hypocritical, it's sexist, it's transphobic, it's saying that people who look female don't deserve autonomy as far as deciding when we are actually being sexual or not. And it just blows my mind, like, YouTube really pisses me off. All these, I mean, Facebook pisses me off, but, you know, with YouTube, I have made videos for YouTube since the beginning, and I've watched it get more and more, you know, anti-women, anti-trans, everything like that. Meanwhile, making, you know, freaking alt-right Nazi anti-vaxxers into millionaires. And you'll have these videos from, like, a music video or something where this woman's wearing a tiny little bathing suit or nipple tassels, and she's like, and that's allowed on, but me sitting here, not touching, not doing anything, just talking, is banned as sexual. And it's just like, how can you possibly look at this music video and be like, well, it's sexualized, but it's not too sexual, so we'll allow it. We'll put it on the front page, but here's this woman sitting there without a shirt. This is hardcore porn. We can't possibly allow... Sorry, did you have any more thoughts on that?
No, I absolutely agree. Like you said, anybody can find anything sexual, and... Yep. As I've been doing research and diving into the cam world, I've found that there are people who do non-sexual shows.
Mukbang! Like, mukbang! Literally just videos of people eating. Yep. And it's huge. Like,
yep. But because my body is unclothed, it is somehow sexual, and I don't understand that. I don't understand that. I don't understand how as you said, a music video with tassels or the teeniest tiniest bikini with, you know,
I mean, like, I love WAP. I love the, you know, the female empowerment of it, and I love women being, you know, allowed to talk about how they enjoy sex. It's just so freaking hypocritical. So that was really fun. I hope that you didn't mind my abrasive humor too much. And again, I applaud you. I thank you both for your, honestly, braveness in presenting, you know, as what I said, algorithms would peg as female and therefore tell you that you're hardcore porn, literally the same as an erect penis or someone receiving a fellatio, apparently. And also being outspoken about these issues that are very important that people, you know, need to be thinking about, need to be pushing better legislation for, need to be rewiring their culturally instilled opinions, like, you know, prostitutes are, it's okay if they get murdered, they deserved it, or
yeah.
homeless people should just stop being homeless, or like, you know, we didn't even really get into people saying, like, you know, faking a disability so you get a parking spot, and like all this,
yeah.
So,
if we want to come back to that topic on another time, I am absolutely happy to rant and rave about that.
Oh yeah, I will definitely give you the platform. So yeah, I really I thank you. And I will in the description, because what I do is I put the video up and then I embed it to a page on my website so I can include like links and everything like that. You know, any, I don't know if you even want to link it to your cam work, cause I don't want to like get you safety wise. That's what I figured, but you know, any kind of organizations or thing and, you know, such that you think people should check out, I'll go ahead and do that. And, yeah, I keep saying thank you, but
thank you.
I'm glad. And oh, and everyone should go watch the NASA video too. So,
yeah.
And all the other videos. No, there's hundreds of videos. At least watch the NASA video. All right. I'm going to stop recording now. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Happy holidays and all that.
Happy holidays.
Bye. Don't get sick. Bye.
I will do my best.
'Hello and welcome everybody to Topless Topics, the channel that seeks to destigmatize female toplessness through repeat exposure. What you're about to listen to is an audio-only version of a previous video of mine, presented both for the convenience of listening to it during a car ride, etc., and also as one of my many attempts to present the idea of female toplessness without getting banned for said female toplessness. If you would like to see the video version of this audio that you're about to listen to, you should go to toplesstopics.org and search by the name of this podcast episode, and you should find the video. Please note that a lot of the videos are still not available because I keep having to change where they're uploaded to, but if it's up so far, you'll find it there. You can also ask me directly if the video is yet available by going to toplesstopics.org/contact, and you'll find various versions of contact info up there. Thank you, and please enjoy the episode. If you have any feedback on the episode or Topless Topics in general, again, please visit toplesstopics.org/contact and let me know. Enjoy!